I'll go there. Ari Rosenbaum, soon to be joined by Dan Venturi of Brightworks for another fun fact-filled episode of That 401k Podcast. This week's topic, we're going to talk about some of the common plan errors on the 401k side that Dan as a plan consultant / TPA / 360 administrator, and that I as an ERISA attorney and a 360 administrator sees as well. And, you know, just really some of the changes that we've seen in these areas, and just really, like I said, the common mistakes that we find from time to time that afflict many, many plan sponsors, many more than anyone would ever think. So again, before we bring Dan on, I just wanted to remind everybody that the next installment of the of that 401k conference will emanate from Citizens Bank Park, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. That is going to be Friday, November 9th, obviously 2018. And it will be 4 hours of education for 401k plan financial advisors, including lunch, a stadium tour. Citizens Bank Ballpark is a great stadium, despite the fact that the Phillies play there. And we're also going to have a meet and greet, free pictures, autographs with Larry Anderson, who is a former Philly, former Red Sox, but known primarily now as the voice, the radio voice of the Philadelphia Phillies, as well as Tommy Lasorda's good friend, Philly Fanatic. If you go to that401ksite.com, you can sign up. It's $75. To me, it's the best bargain in terms of 401k conferences, and I hope you can join us, and we'll have other events to announce soon, Tampa Bay / St. Pete's. The venue is actually in St. Petersburg. Everyone always says Tampa Bay, but it will be in St. Petersburg. That will be in March, hopefully. And we got some other things cooking, Atlanta, Los Angeles. Those are some of the cities that we're talking to. And, of course, if you are a 401k plan provider, you're interested in sponsoring, obviously you can email me at Ari, that's A-R-Y, at therosenbaumlawford.com for more information. Sponsorships for most events start as little as $500. For a plan provider who wants to get their name across. So that's, again, Philadelphia, the site for the next version of that 401k conference. We hope, as a 401k plan advisor, you could be there. And, of course, if you're a plan provider sponsor, we'd love to have your help there as well. And we're back with our good friend Dan Venturi from Brightworks. Dan, how about the obligatory plug for your firm's website?
It's brightworks.com with two X's. The phone number is 1-866-316-7326.
So how was your week? We did meet during the week at the Cheesecake Factory, and we'll probably start from there. Besides the Cheesecake Factory?
We did. The week was good. You know, I think we signed off last week with Go Buckeyes. That worked out well for me. A little more gray hair.
They came from behind. It looked like a sure deal that Penn State was going to pull it out, and then all of a sudden, you know, Ohio State comes back and beats them.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that fourth down play was that they called, but, you know, I'll take the W and move on. That Ryder Cup thing, though, I don't know what that was about. I feel totally manipulated by the whole thing.
The U.S. can't get it together when it comes to the Ryder Cup. They always seem a way to lose it.
No, and they sell it like, you know, there's all this nationalism and we need to care about it, and the players didn't seem to care. You know, at least when you watch the World Cup, you know those players care. Like, they're crying at the end of the games. If they don't do well, the Brazilians didn't do well this year, they were greeted at the airport with fruit, right? People were throwing fruit at them.
Yeah, but, you know, soccer is a team sport, so, you know, they're always playing as a team, and then on the national level it means so much more. But when you're an individual golfer, and then now all of a sudden you're being part of a team, I think it's probably a little bit more difficult. Maybe that's the reason.
That could be it. I don't know. I just felt manipulated putting, you know, the effort and time into it this weekend.
Sure.
But anyway, we should digress.
Yeah. So, yeah, we had fun at Cheesecake Factory, which is one of my favorite restaurants, and I always find it funny because we meet halfway in Melville. And the funniest part of Cheesecake Factory, they have, you know, like four locations on the island. I think it's one by you, by Stony Brook and Lake Grove.
Yeah.
They got one in Bayshore. They got one Melville that we go to. And they got one in Westbury. And the funniest thing I always find about Cheesecake Factory is the Westbury one is in this dead mall, the Source, where there's like, now they're renovating it and they're adding this, I think, a Chinese home improvement place, whatever it is.
But interesting.
It's a dead mall. I mean, you could see, like, you know, in the Westerns, you have that tumbleweed, you know, the mall of tumbleweed, and that's that kind of mall. Yet when you go to the Cheesecake Factory, it's always jam-packed, which...
It's always crowded.
It's crazy, but, you know, Melville's a little bit different, so we didn't have to wait, which is always good. But the restaurant experience is always weird because, you know, I was always pressed for time. And when I'm pressed for time, I always, you know, it's one of my things that I always worry about. And when you're dealing with a restaurant and you're pressed for time, it's the waiter, you know, or waitress. You're always trying to find where they are when you need something. And, you know, sometimes they'll just take 5 minutes and just walk away and be in parts unknown. Especially when you're, like, looking for the check.
Yeah, I didn't think she was overly motivated, to tell you the truth.
She wasn't that bad. But the other thing that bothered me, and I know you got it, the two other thing, small things that bothered me. So I had to wait for you a couple minutes. People, the newest thing, and I've seen it with kids when they have, like, they bring their Kindles or they bring their iPads, all of a sudden playing video without, like, headphones. So yep. There's this guy sitting behind us, diagonally behind us. Before he got there, he was just, like, playing videos. I'm like, you know what? With his, I guess, his wife. And it's just, you know, it's like, I don't need to hear your videos.
Nope.
You know?
Noise pollution.
Yeah, you know, it's enough that I have to hear you talk, and now I have to hear your videos. And, you know, you got kids now with the Kindles, and they need to be entertained instead of, like, eating and talking to their parents at the dinner table. They got to play their videos, too. And I think the only other thing that ticked me off was, if you're ever in a restaurant, or it's like... I don't care if it's just a restaurant, a movie theater, wherever you are, and it's open seating, and there's a whole bunch of empty seats, and there are empty tables, and the guys just all of a sudden have to sit next to us. It's the same thing when you're. It's the same thing like in the parking lot where you're driving, you park, and it's like completely empty, and somebody just needs to park next to you, even though there's about 1,000 spots. It drives me nuts.
I couldn't agree more. The other one I hate is when you go to a restaurant and they tell you there's a wait, yet half the restaurant is empty.
There's like a Chili's by in Westbury that does that, where you know you'll be there at like 3-4 o'clock. Oh, there's a wait, and then like half the restaurant's empty because they have no staff to staff.
It drives me nuts. Drives me nuts.
And you told me you had a thing about the credit card.
Oh yeah, I don't know if this is catching on elsewhere on the planet, but it's. It's all over where I am. So the newest thing is they've got 3 or 4 different companies running around signing up basically every bagel shop, pizzeria, restaurant, deli. And the concept is they're passing back the merchant fees. So they're masquerading it as a discount if you pay cash. And when you confront them on it, they all play stupid and say it's the credit cards that are charging you the customer the thing.
Oh, come on.
It just infuriates me. I've got a list of places I can't go now because I refuse to play ball.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. I remember years ago you couldn't do that, but then supposedly I don't know if they changed the law, but I know the way out is we'll discount you for cash. We can't charge you extra for credit, but we'll discount you for cash, which is the biggest nonsense. And I remember there was a gas station. It sits closed and reopened by my house where it was like it would tell you the price in cash, and then when you go to the pump and use a credit card, it tells you it's 20 cents more a gallon. Yeah.
You know what? Like, I get it to a degree. Just, you know, make the cheeseburgers 20 cents more. You know what I mean? I don't need to see the sausage being made. Like, if times are tough and you want to raise costs, prices, that's fine. Just don't you know, come up with this scheme and insult my intelligence, right? I don't mind paying more. I mind being insulted and paying more at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen it in the 401k plan side of things, and it's always a big problem. It's I've seen it where, you know, many years ago I was working at a TPA, then I left, and they replaced me, and they had to replace me with three people. I was one person. And I remember at a certain point they were charging people for a safe harbor notice. Now, mind you that this was a safe harbor notice that was just a repeat of last year's. We just do a, you know, a search and replace in Word, and yep. We print it out. And I understand a lot of clients were really ticked off. You know, it was always free. Now, all of a sudden, you charge $150. And, you know, I always say, as a plan provider, don't nickel and dime people. So some TPAs were doing that where they would they'd create – I don't think they do that anymore, but they would create like a fee, like a they would pass over the custody fee to you. So it's like, you know, the 6 basis points, whatever the custody fee is. All of a sudden now they, I saw one TPA in particular. We have a daily platform fee and it's 25 basis points, even though I knew that the custody fee was only 6. But you know, clients just don't like to get nickel and dime, whether it's TPA services or anything in 401k or you know anything in life and in business. I was vice president of a synagogue, which I always joke about, and you know, they used to tell us, oh, you know, the Hebrew school's free, but that's not free after you had to pay like $150 for books and then pay a participation fee of $180. So when you have two kids, you're out $400 for, you know, something that's supposed to be free.
Free, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And Stony Brook, when I was at college at Stony Brook, they would do that. They wouldn't raise tuition, but they would raise the fees. All these fees that scholarships and programs couldn't take care of. And at one point, it was to a point where they were going to institute a parking fee. It was going to be $150, except that until you're a junior, you couldn't park on campus. So, you know, it's not surprising that people are doing that. And, you know, again, they're doing that in the 401k plan business. Not as much anymore because with the disclosure, but you always have to worry you're going to get nickel and dime. So let's get to our topic, really about some of the plan errors and mistakes that we see. I mean, you know, I have a list of a couple things, and you could certainly add at the end that you see as a TPA now and a 316 and then a plan consultant.
Absolutely.
So my first thing that I always see is plan errors that's become very, you know, it's like a family feud. The number one on the survey is late deferrals on 401k plans. It's just amazing that 10, 15 years ago, we were always led to believe that as long as the plan sponsor put in the deposits by the 15th day of the following month, that it was a safe harbor, and the Department of Labor said, no, that's not the case. And now all of a sudden it's exploded into what I see as the biggest common error with 401k plans.
No, agreed. I mean, we're out there submitting, you know, the payroll for most of our clients, and they still submit it to us late. You know, we've got this one client, you know, they're leaving us, and it's the first time I've lost a client, and I'm happy about it. Because they weren't worth the time we had to put into them to keep them remotely compliant. But what they would do is they would dump 12 weeks of payroll on you at one time. And then when we said that they were late, they'd wondered why.
Yeah, that's like a clue, you know.
You know, like, and the thing is, when you're submitting payroll, you have to do it sequentially. Because you have loan, you know, overpayments and all those things that you have to address. And the plan for it to stay remotely compliant, you know, we needed to put in a ton of time on that one. So, yeah, we see that a ton. Ari, another one that we see a lot. This one's my favorite. When folks refer to things as open enrollment. Once entry is met, once eligibility is met on a K plan, you can join at any time thereafter, you know, assuming the plan allows, you know, daily deferral changes. Plan sponsors do not understand that concept.
Yeah, that's number four on my list. We'll skip to it, but here it is. Eligibility issues and not allowing people to defer. And that's a very big error because, to me, it's one of the dumbfounding errors because of the fix that you have to make as a plan sponsor. So if you, like you said, screw up on eligibility and you people entered in the plan and you didn't give them the opportunity to defer, they have a missed deferral opportunity and they don't get to put in their money. You're going to have to put in money for them. And we've seen it. It could be, you know, the 50% of the deferral rate or 50% of their rate. I mean, it's an error they could avoid, but you know, I've seen so many plan sponsors do it where they just don't keep up on eligibility and don't keep up on the opportunity for deferral changes. And it's just amazing how many plans do that and do it often and over an extended period of time.
Yep. Well, selfish plug here. You know, these errors are what you know, keeps us in business. It sells a story. I mean, these are the things that you want a 316 involved with and the things that we're employed to prevent.
Yeah, I mean, these errors are there. And, of course, if we live in an ideal world and there were no errors, then we two of us would probably be out of work.
Right.
Or we'd have a substantial cutback in workload. But, yeah, as long, you know, we keep all mentioning it, but, you know, plan sponsors keep on doing it. So that never changes. It's the same thing when I always write articles about payroll providers. Okay, well, it hurts me one way in the case that these payroll provider TPAs won't give me a business. But on the other hand, because they're in business, I get the work on the back end when it comes to the VCP work and all the other correction work that we got to do with these plans. So, you know, it works both ways.
Yeah.
Next on my list, it's now first week in October that we're recording this, and I've already had three phone call conversations, and I tweeted about it. I've had three phone call conversations about clients that need VCP, voluntary compliance program submissions for compensation issues. Do you see that where it happens when the plan sponsor is matching and allowing deferrals on one rate of compensation and the plan document says something else? Like in their mind, they think there's an exclusion when there isn't?
All the time. Absolutely. I mean, again, another thing that we talk about all the time, Ari, is the payroll is where, 80-85% of the issues that we see originate from. So, yeah, big one is people forgetting to include mid-year compensation increases. See that a lot in our clientele. You know, folks getting raises in July and the comp from July to December isn't included in the deferral. They'll reset it January 1st, but you got to go back and, you know, that's a missed, it's a missed deferral opportunity on that piece of income, on that piece of compensation that you need to correct for.
Yeah, I mean, typically the way I see it is the plan sponsor thinks that there's an exclusion when the plan document says there isn't. So it's, you know, bonuses, moving expenses for, you know, if you're dealing with a car dealership, car allowances, PTO, and vacation pay, and a whole bunch of things. And it's just an amazing error that happens. And, you know, I've heard it in October because now, you know, for the late audits for the 5500s, you know, for the extended submission, October 15th, right around the corner. So I'm just really surprised that I've already had three calls in the first week about these issues. And it's just really over the years, I've seen a tremendous amount of uptick in these issues. Number three on my list, loan repayments. You see, I love loans and plans, except the problem with loans is that there are too many plan providers that allow their plan sponsors to have multiple loans and then loans in amounts less than $1,000. So what do you think about loan repayments? To me, that's a big error that happens too often.
It does. It does. We've got one plan that required spousal consent forms. And that's always fun.
Yeah, sure.
You know, we're trying to get that amended. What we see a lot of times is folks not following the directions we provide regarding loans. So we see a lot of loans that are delayed in starting that need to get reamortized, you know, with accelerated payments. We had one plan that you know, offered a ridiculous amount of loans, 4 or 5, and it just got to the point where it was out of control. You know, people were treating the plan as a checking account. So we had to put a stop to that and sort of restrict the loans to 2. You know, there's to your point, there's value in allowing folks to access their money for certain emergencies. But at the same time, you know, one of our concerns is the amount of defaults that we see. You know, folks leaving jobs, and those loans aren't always portable.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to plan documents and how I draft it, I always go for the one loan outstanding at every time. Sure, you could allow for re-amortization and a refinance. I'm not opposed to that, but I also include language of a minimum loan of $1,000. And then at termination of employment, I say it's immediately due. You know, because the whole thing of rolling over a loan, that's only if the other plan allows it.
Yes.
And it's to me, it's like, you know what, you're gone, adios. Let's do the offset, ta-da.
Yeah.
It's just I always say keep it simple, stupid. And I think by just saying that you're gonna have the loan come due at termination of employment and just only allow one loan outstanding, that's what you got to do. You avoid the mistakes where you need to. And, you know, I always say, don't ask for trouble. And I always tell this story many years ago. I was working for a TPA, and there was a carpet company that we took over, and there was unlimited loans. I mean, there were people on the plan that had 9 loans outstanding.
Yeah.
And, you know, with administration, as good as the best administrators are, mistakes happen. And, you know, they may pay one loan and then pay 8 loans and forget about one. And then you have a, you know, deemed distribution. The loan is the default. And the problem is with the loan is the default, a lot of times it's through the plan sponsor's error. And it takes a while for them to realize that there was a default. So with this client, we restated the plan document to allow one loan outstanding. And the person in charge of the conversions, or the person in charge of putting the plan on the system, didn't read the plan document. So she typed it in, multiple loans, whatever. And so when the call center person got a phone call from a participant wanting a new loan when they had like 5 or 6 loans outstanding, and he told them they could get loans, you know, the plan sponsor client was really upset. And, you know, the person in that department dealing with putting the plan on the system blamed me for it, which is what she did. And it turns out she was wrong, because all they did was they looked at how many loans outstanding there were. And so they said, okay, that means there's multiple loans. But to me, loans are just, you know, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And I think giving out loans in unlimited amounts and unlimited times is a recipe for disaster. And one way to avoid it is to not offer it at all. Or, like I said, one loan outstanding, $1,000 minimum. You know, it's due when you terminate or leave, whatever it is, and that's it. So we did eligibility. Again, that's a big problem. And then, of course, number 5 on my list, and it really should be 1 or 2, but I don't see as often as anymore, but it does happen. No filing of the 5500. You know, it happens, but that's a big error.
Yeah, costly too. Yeah.
You know, the Department of Labor has a great delinquent filing program where they have maximum amounts that you pay. You know, $2,000, whatever it is. That's great, but you know, if you get that letter from the Department of Labor and IRS, and there's a $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 penalty, that hurts, especially when they increase the limits per day. Especially Department of Labor on late filings. Do you see that on a lot of takeovers?
Not too frequently. I mean, obviously, you know, we do all the 5500 filings. We sign them all on our clients. So that really doesn't happen, you know, for folks with under our umbrella, so to speak. We have, you know, back when I was doing diligence in my consulting days, that was something we'd see, you know, occasionally for smaller plans that might be the target of an acquisition. But generally, you know, plans that have to file you know, with an auditor's opinion, at least get the 5,500 in. I've seen folks, you know, the audit's not done by 10:15, and, you know, they attach a piece of paper saying the audit's to follow. I mean, I've seen that. But not so much people just not filing at all. You know, that's a big one. That's a big mistake.
I had a client where they didn't file it for a few years, and, you know, the payroll provider TPA, you know, said, oh, we sent you emails and whatever, and, you know, it's always, you know, contractually, it's always the plan sponsor's problem and fault.
Yeah.
And they had to do a late filing. But again, you know, it's caught in time. That's great. If you don't do it on, you know, prior to getting that letter from the DOL or the IRS, you know, it's costly, but it's less costly than if you don't fix it and they catch you, which eventually it takes a couple of years, but they do. They will find you. You know, it's like Liam Neeson in Taken. They will find you, and they will catch you.
They have a particular set of skills.
Exactly. You know, eventually, you know, it's all computerized now, and eventually they'll get to you. And they have your name and address and, you know, EIN, so.
Sure.
Especially if you filed before. So, it happens. So, you know, again, it's a big error, but, you know, hopefully it gets all fixed out. And then the last on my list, and then you could add as well that what you've seen. I used to see this a lot more back in the day when I first started doing VCP submissions. Less so now, but it does happen. Of course, no timely restatement or plan amendment, where the plan document, you know, there was a requisite remedial amendment period where the 401k plan document had to be restated to comply with current law. We have it now 86 years. And there are times when the deadlines are pushed and aren't followed, and the plan sponsor is out of compliance because they failed to properly sign and date a new plan document by the IRS deadline. Have you seen those? I don't see them as much as I used to, which is for financially it's a shame, but for plan sponsors it's good.
Yeah, it was a big thing, you know, PPA and all that stuff. A bunch of years ago, I remember that was one of our top diligence items. We're going through a restatement now for some of our longer term clients. I'm getting the SPDs restated and all that fun stuff. So it's something to definitely keep an eye on. You'd be amazed at how quickly time flies. So yeah, it's something that we pay attention to. You know, clients that we onboard these days are pretty good, you know, but like I said, back when we had those required amendments, PPA, and even further back, Gus and all that stuff, that was something that we definitely looked for.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, you know, doing an extra restatement, and then I had to do for the same client, you know, a Gus and a TRA-6. Now, you know, trying to find a document that's, you know, that you could fill out that was, you know, had to be restated in 1993. I mean, that's a bit of a problem, a bit of a stretch. And I'm sure there are plans out there that have been restated since the beginning of time. I remember years ago I had a potential governmental plan that hadn't complied since the late 60s.
Wow.
Pre-ERISA. And I'm like, how the hell am I going to get a plan document out of that? And, you know, I asked the question at the IRS, and IRS said, yeah, it's got to be restated. And I'm like, how am I going to find a you know, forget about a TEFRA-DEFRA document or a TRA-6. I mean, how am I going to find an ERISA document from 76? It's not something you could just, you know, order over the phone. It's not, you know, I don't think Relias or whatever their name is today, whether they actually have it. So that's a lot of fun.
I mean, you can't find one of those on eBay, right? It's not like
yeah, Amazon doesn't sell them. They don't sell any ERISA initial ERISA plans out there. So what other errors do you see when you take these plans on?
So the other one that you know, I see a lot more than I used to. There are two that I see a lot more than I used to. Rehire dates and the break in service rules. I don't think anyone pays attention to that.
Nobody understands them.
They
don't understand.
That's part of it.
The problem is usually with the immediate rehire. A guy leaves your service and then 6 months later comes back. I mean, it's happened.
Yeah.
And in certain businesses, it happens a lot more often, you know? But
I just asked you about one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's one. You know, you see, the reason I think you see it a lot more is because there's, at least our manufacturing clients are telling me all the time that there's a real lack of talent, and staffing is a big issue for them. So, you know, folks that might have left thinking that it was better somewhere else, subsequently realizing that it wasn't, they want to come back. You know, so I've seen a lot more of that. The other one I see is folks thinking that part-time employees or seasonal employees or interns, just by their job title, are excluded from the plan. And they're not, right? You know, once any of those folks meet eligibility, this isn't a health plan. Once they meet the eligibility requirements, they're allowed in. And, you know, plan sponsors have a really hard time wrapping their heads around the concept of an intern being eligible for their 401k plan.
Yeah, I've always been a big fan, speaking as a former employee, I've always been a big fan of immediate eligibility, but the biggest drawback of immediate eligibility, it allows part-timers in. And you got to watch on how you exclude employees. I mean, you know, I come back from the old days where they actually, I never did it, but people used to exclude employees by name. And then they would exclude them part-timers. And, you know, the IRS has always said, you know, you need a reasonable classification. So there are ways around part-timers being excluded. You just can't call them part-timers. You have to have some, a reasonable classification. It's a very, very tough subject and touchy subject. And, yeah, it's a really big problem, especially when you have eligibility that isn't tied to a year of service, where they don't require the 20 hours a week for the entire year. Mm-hmm. When you're doing 6 months, 3 months, or immediate eligibility, yeah, it's a huge issue.
Yeah, and like I said, folks are confused when you tell them this stuff, and it, you don't want to turn it into, you know, a contest, you know, over who knows more. But, you know, at some point, it used to drive me nuts when I was a consultant. People hire you to do a job. And, you know, when you tell them something they don't like hearing, suddenly they forget that they hired you to do a job, you know.
Or they'll shop for another answer that's, you know,
yeah.
Better.
Yeah, well, exactly.
I've had that.
Exactly. So, yeah, those are the ones that you know, come to mind a lot. There are others.
I think one error that's going to become more and more popular, I believe, it's not on the list, but it will become more popular. I don't even think it makes the top 10, is, I think, hardship requests. IRS put out some guidance that they really want to see backup. And they're, you know, on audit, if you have a person asking for multiple hardship requests, they're going to want to see, you know, they're going to want to pick these people out and really determine whether it's a hardship. And it gets really tricky because you have a lot of providers out there that are, one in particular, a big mutual fund company was offering like a hardship service where they would approve the hardships. And, you know, I always found that very, very dicey when you're not asking for backup. When I review any hardship request, if I don't see a bill attached or I don't see any type of, proof, I don't approve it.
Yeah. So we had one come in, I want to say 2 weeks ago, and she was really aggravated when we declined her because what she submitted was a bill for tires for her car.
Well, it's a hardship for her, you know?
Right. Yeah, but unfortunately, and to your point, right, we're knee deep in audits right now, and pretty much every single one of our audits this year, the hardships were one of the data points that they asked for.
Yeah, I mean, it's to me, if you're not seeking backup on an audit, especially if the IRS is really ramping up the enforcement of it, it's a really big, big problem because, you know, they want to avoid a situation. The IRS doesn't like the ability of people to get their money at any time. They don't want 401k plans to be like an ATM machine. And if you had a harsh situation where they don't have to offer proof, then it really becomes, a contravention of the pre-59.5 in-service distribution rule. And they don't want to see that. And uh-huh. they want to see proof. And, you know, many years ago, I always tell the story, I got a hardship request from somebody in jail. It wasn't like on prison stationery, like Statesville Prison in like one of the Naked Gun movies, like a Naked Gun 30-33rd. But it was, you know, the guy was in, it was in the poke, I guess, whatever we call that. And they wanted to, you know, send money to a relative on the outside. And, you know, that's, you know, the prison's a hardship. I get that. I've seen all these prison movies, you know, Escape from Alcatraz is a good favorite. But you can't do that.
No.
So I've had to say a lot of times no. Usually I say yes because I have clients who make sure that their participants get it. Just this past week, I have a client, really good guy, plan sponsor with the day-to-day administrator, really up to snuff, and he sends me a hardship request. And, you know, I see all these bills for the guy's wife, and then the client says, are you sure the $5,500 is enough? And, you know, you're allowed to gross it up in excess of the hardship in order to pay off that, that upfront penalty that you got to pay for the early distribution.
The 10%?
Yeah, the 10%. So, you know, it is what it is. But like I said, that's an error that's going to be eventually on that Family Feud list of the top 10 items on the survey. So, you know, we'll see what happens. And again, we'll see other errors. I mean, you know, investment policy statement not having it, you know, it's not an error in the sense that it would land the plan sponsor in trouble. I just had a client go through a deal audit, and, you know, all they do is they get the warning. You know what? You got to put processes in place to effectively manage a plan. That's not really an error. So do you got anything else, or that's it?
Those are the ones that are top of the mind. You know, plan sponsors have new and creative ways to screw plans up all the time. So, you know, if we play this game in a couple of months, I'm sure there'll be some new material.
Yeah, I mean, we've had our crazy situations. You know, like I said, I had the client with the DB plan, and they put in all the money with Bernie Madoff. That's not something that's a frequent error. You know, it happens. So, Dan, one last plug, I guess, for your site.
Yep, so it's Brightworks 2X's, just like Dos Equis. You can give me a call at 866-316-7326. Enjoy the baseball today, and go Yankees.
Yeah, today I'm wearing a Brewers jersey. But like for me, that4kcite.com, the RosenbaumLawFirm.com, and all that other stuff, and Twitter and whatever. And I guess, you know, in honor of Eric the Midget, bye for now.
About all the negative people and how they make you sick, and they're calling me.